On today's Strom Sports Show, episode 80, the Twins make a big signing in Josh Donaldson, but what do I make of it? Does the lineup have too much power now? At 34 years old, is it sort of a risk signing Donaldson to this lucrative of a deal? Phil Miller from the Star Tribune, who has covered the Twins since 2013, he'll join me as well today. We'll talk about Josh Donaldson, Miguel Sano's new deal, and how the Twins stack up in the AL. We also have to get into the Gopher basketball team. Is Richard Pitino underrated? Hell of a job he's doing right now. And last, and certainly least, Odell Beckham Jr. We'll talk about his LSU incident and how it could affect the LSU program and OBJ going forward. All right, here we go. My name is Steven Strom. Let's do this thing.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. It should be a good one.
Thanks for having me, Steven.
Double S anytime, man.
Christopher Mando Russo here. You are listening to Steven Strom on TalkNorth.com.
Always passionate, always fiery. You're listening to the Strom Sports Show. Take it away, Steven.
And here we go on a beautiful Sunday morning here. Thank you for making me a part of your Sunday this morning. My name is Steven Strom of TalkNorth.com. Episode 80 here on the Strom Sports Show. Big shout out to my producer, Brandon Morton, Jim Suen on the website if you want to advertise with us. All right, so it's kind of a weight off my back not having to talk about Vikings football anymore. We've kind of turned the page here. Close the seal on another disappointing season. What else is new with the Minnesota Vikings? So a little break off the show today with the Vikings. We'll talk about it next week. Maybe get into a little free agency, who to sign or not to sign. But for now, there's some big news coming out of Minnesota. And the biggest one this week. And there's been some trades, there's been some activity with the Timberwolves, and I think we need to lead today with the Minnesota Twins and what to make of this Josh Donaldson signing. So the Twins finally went out and they paid the money that they needed to get Josh Donaldson, a guy who is an MVP in the AL, a guy who's a perennial 30 home run hitter, had 34 home runs, 98 RBI, something along the lines of that last year. 34 years old, maybe a little bit of a risk, but nonetheless, the Twins finally go out and they do sign a big name free agent. They do bring him a lot of money. He's 34 years old. The deal is the second largest ever to a player over 34 in MLB history. $92 million over 4 years, and that is all guaranteed. So, what to take of this? Well, the Twins set an MLB record for home runs last season, right? The Bomba Squad. But they get swept by the Yankees after being outscored 24-7 with the pitching being destroyed. So what do the Twins do? They throw money at the wrong position. Now, before I start this take, I first want to say this. If the Twins don't make a move at the trade deadline, this is my stance on it. And obviously, season hasn't started, so the trade deadline hasn't happened. So this is my take on it right now. But this is susceptible to change, my take on this, if they go at the trade deadline and trade for a pitcher. So let's just put that out there. But right now, they haven't. So what do the Twins do after setting the record for home runs last season with the Bomba Squad, but then getting swept by the Yankees with their pitching being absolutely exposed? What do the Twins do? The Twins throw money at the wrong position. I like the Josh Donaldson signing. I like it. But he's 34 years old. He's coming off a 37 home run, 94 RBI, 259 batting average. Now, the one thing I say about, and I rip the Yankees a lot, is that they have a powerful lineup, but when it comes to the postseason, those home run numbers drop. We saw that with the Twins last year, and you want contact hitters. I'm not sure. When I look up and down this lineup, Nelson Cruz, Mitch Garver, Miguel Sano, Josh Donaldson, Max Kepler, maybe Polanco and Arise are the two contact hitters, but other than that, when you look at Cruz, Garver, Sano, Donaldson, Kepler, Buxton, Rosario, I mean, there's pretty much two guys that are contact hitters, and that is Polanco and Luis Arise. And it sort of scares me going forward here, and I fully expect the Twins to be back in the playoffs. There's a lot of good things happening around the league for the Twins to make this playoff run. Obviously, the Astros getting absolutely slaughtered with A.J. Hinch being gone, their GM being gone. Then you look at Boston, what happened with them. Alex Cora's gone out here in New York. Carlos Beltran's gone. Obviously, the Mets are in the NL. I'm just making the point that this cheating scandal has taken on a life of itself. So now you've got arguably the best team or second best team before the firings in Houston, who I think is still going to be good, but they're going to be obviously on a microscope, and I think there's every move is going to be calculated by the MLB. Whatever happens, I don't know what they're going to do, but whatever happens, every move is going to be calculated. But they lose their manager, they lose their GM, and the Boston Red Sox, who had an off year last year, lose Alex Cora, and you know it does, you know, mess with a team's morale. And the Twins kind of get out of this scot-free. They didn't do anything, fortunately. No Minnesota team would ever cheat. But this is an opportunity to take advantage of. And I thought in this offseason, instead of throwing money at a Josh Donaldson, well, where was Madison Bumgarner? Where was Zach Wheeler? Where was Dallas Keuchel? Oh, I'm sorry. How can I forget the splash free agency signings that the Twins threw money at? Homer Bailey. My bad. Who was 1-14 with a 6 ERA 2 seasons ago, and 14-23 in his last 2 seasons. Oh, my bad, Rich Hill. I forgot Rich Hill, who's about 50 years old, not even going to be able to pitch until June, was their two big pitching free agent signings. So here's how the pitching rotation stacks up. Jose Barreros, good. Order Rizzi, really good. Pineda, eh. Rich Hill, eh. Homer Bailey. And I'm going to go look at the team that just knocked out the Twins, and that is the Yankees. Let's read their rotation. And I get it. Obviously, different salary cap. Twins have nowhere near the money that the Yankees have. But the Yankees made it a priority. We're getting pitching. After last season, we are getting pitching. So here's the Yankee rotation if we want to compare. Gerrit Cole, Masahiro Tanaka, James Paxton, Luis Severino, and Jay Happ. That is what the Yankees have constructed for this upcoming season. If there is any Twins fan that thinks that they can compete with that rotation, they are shot. I mean, I'm sorry. And once again, I love the lineup. I think the lineup is deep. I think it's powerful. I think it's explosive. I think it's electric. I think it's dynamic. But when you get to the postseason, not just baseball, you look at hockey, what's it about? The goaltender. When it comes to football, what's it about? The defense. When it comes to baseball, what's it about? The pitching. And the Twins don't have enough of it. I feel comfortable putting out Jose Barreros. I feel comfortable putting out Jake Odorizzi. They did, I mean, Barreros pitched 4 innings. He did decent. I thought they gave him like too much of an applaud for 4 innings, but you know, it is what it is. Jake Odorizzi, I thought, pitched great. He showed pride. He showed heart in that game 3 against the Yankees. And then after that, I mean, it's a big drop-off, guys. Pineda, Rich Hill, Homer Bailey. Is that who you're going to throw? Or are you going to do a bullpen game? Which, yeah, that really worked last year in New York, starting Randy Dubnyk, who got absolutely torched. I mean, it's just not, you know, and I feel like the Twins are right there. But this was a huge miss in this offseason, not going to get a pitcher. And this can all change if they can go out and they can get someone at the trade deadline. They've got the assets in them in the farm system. They're going to be able to make trades to other teams and make pretty good offers to teams like the Diamondbacks. I don't know if they're going to automatically just trade Madison Bumgarner after signing him, but a guy like Zach Wheeler, Dallas Keuchel, these guys, and there's going to be other pitchers that are going to rise in this baseball season that are going to be entering the final year of their contract. That's where the rentals come in. But I think for the most part, again, what did the Bomba Squad do in the playoffs? 4 runs in game 1, 1 run in game 2, or 2 runs in game 2, and 1 run in game 3. 7 runs in 3 games. Then that is coming off the Major League Baseball home run record. 7 runs in 3 games, while the pitching gave up 24. Again, Twins were outscored 24-7. Why? Because the pitching was vulnerable. It was exposed. And that's where going into this offseason, I was hammering away like the Twins need to throw money at a pitcher, not at a 34-year-old power hitter. And once again, I'm not knocking the Donaldson signing. I like it. I liked that the Twins went out and got a free agent. But I just think that this was the wrong one. I thought that this was the wrong one here to throw $92 million over 4 years at. If anything, you throw that at a Keuchel. You throw that at a Wheeler. You throw that at a Bumgarner. And I'm not sure if there was a report that they didn't even attempt to go after Bumgarner after the first meeting because he wanted way too much money. But that's what the Twins have lacked and were missing for so long. The fans just want a pitcher. They want a complete rotation because once again, and even I thought last year when they played the Yankees, I thought the Twins have a chance because they're able to hit. And you are quickly reminded that this MLB postseason is not about who can hit the most home runs. It's not who has the most power, because if that was the case, the Yankees would have won the last few years. But the Astros, the Nationals, those guys have contact hitters. And the common thread is they have great pitching. The Nationals, Strasburg, Scherzer, right? They've got really good pitching. When the Astros won, it was Cole, it was Verlander. Right? It's about pitching in the playoffs. You got to have a 1-2 punch that you feel really confident in. And even right now with Barrios and Odorizzi, I don't know how comfortable I feel when you compare it to the Yankees. Okay, Barrios versus Cole, who are you taking? Gerrit Cole is coming off one of the greatest seasons a pitcher has ever seen. Jake Odorizzi versus Tanaka? I mean, maybe, but Tanaka's turned into a really solid postseason pitcher. Again, the one positive could be the trade deadline. Twins have a lot of prospects, and if you're looking for a rental for the rest of the season for a pitcher, that's where you win this back. But for right now, it's hard for me to call this offseason a win when you didn't fill the void that was missing the most in October, and that was the pitching. That was a starting pitcher. Even the bullpen to an extent, guys. I don't know. You still feel comfortable with Romo? I like Taylor Rogers. Do I still feel comfortable with Trevor May? They didn't really do a lot to solidify that bullpen either. Again, the Twins can get away with it in the regular season because the AL Central is atrocious. Okay, the Tigers might not win 40 games this year. The White Sox are going to be better, and it's going to be pretty much the Twins, and then a little bit down to the Indians, and a little bit down to the White Sox, and then everyone else. That's how it's going to work this year. And the Twins can get away with it in the Central because it's crummy as hell. But once it comes to October, you have to have three guys in that rotation that you feel comfortable with. And I don't think the Twins have that right now, and they needed to fill that void, and they didn't. All right, let's get positive now. Phil Miller, who's covered the Twins since 2013, he'll join me in just a second here about Josh Donaldson, Miguel Sano's contract, and the entire preview here of the Minnesota Twins as we're looking forward to spring training here. Stick with us here on the Strom Sports Show. And we're joined here by Phil Miller, who has covered the Twins for the Star Tribune since 2013. He came on the show last year. Always a pleasure to have him on. Phil, Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on here. Steven Strom here of TalkNorth.com. How's everything?
It's going very well, Steven. It's almost spring training time, so almost back to the baseball season.
Yeah, you've got to be excited. I know we just kind of touched up on the weather. 10 degrees out in Minnesota. I do not miss that living out here in New Jersey. It's like tropical weather. It's 37 here. But yeah, spring training is just ahead. And the biggest news is Josh Donaldson signing with the Twins. 4 years, $92 million. The second largest deal to a player over 34 in MLB history. Now, I was a component of going out and signing a pitcher, which I think they tried to do but didn't get there. They got Homer Bailey. They got Rich Hill. But let's just go over overall your thoughts here on the signing of Josh Donaldson. What does he bring to the table? What does this mean for this Twins team chasing that World Series championship?
Well, I guess we'll see about the World Championship part. What he does, it, this is going to sound kind of funny to say, but the Twins set out to beef up the pitching staff this year and this winter, and this is how they decided to do it. And what I mean by that is they did not attract any of the marquee free agents for the pitching staff. They did add Homer Bailey and Rich Hill, guys that they hope will be in their rotation by midseason, but when they were unable to sign somebody to beef up the rotation by itself, one of the other ways to help the pitching staff was to help the defense. The Twins, it kind of got lost in a 101-win season. The Twins had a well below average infield defense, and that is less important in an era where the ball goes over the fence every other inning, but it still played a role in some of their pitching problems. So that is, you know, pitching and defense, you hear, I don't know if that's, if the old adage is true, but the Twins were unable to do a whole lot with pitching, so they decided to do what might be a whole lot with defense. And again, it might sound funny to think of Josh Donaldson as being brought aboard mostly as a defensive upgrade, but he could have difference in Josh Donaldson versus Miguel Sano at third base might be arguably even bigger than Josh Donaldson versus a healthy CJ Crone, which is the guy he's essentially replacing in the batting order, does to the offense. They have needed a good defensive third baseman, and it's not the thing that you're going to notice about him, but I do think that that was a large part of the calculation on the Twins' part, that that run prevention is what they need to do this winter, and without the most obvious answer available to them, and I think they are still pursuing pitching, beefing up the defense is another good way. The fact that they're doing it with the greatest opponent hitter that they have ever faced in the franchise's history is another little bonus.
Yeah, I read your article and I was like, man, he's the twin killer. Like, honestly, when I think of twin killers, I don't think anything other than the New York Yankees. Like, I don't think of a specific player, but boy, when I read the numbers, I'm like, good God, this guy really absolutely did kill the Twins. And I forgot he did play for, you know, he's been everywhere. You know, he went to the Braves, he was in Toronto, then he went to Cleveland. So he's been everywhere. But I wanted to get into it, and I was going to ask you if Donaldson basically will move Sano to first base, but you did sort of answer that here. And I do think that it's sort of uncharacteristic for the Twins to have sort of a sloppy infield, because that's been their mantra in the mid-2000s. They were making the playoffs. They were a scrappy, really good defensive team, never made errors. And that sort of changed this year. I wanted to get into the pitching. Do you think that after Martin Perez's great year for what they got him at, do you think that sort of played the role in getting Rich Hill and Homer Bailey and just kind of saying, okay, we're going to spend minimal money and just hope to squeeze every last ounce of talent out of these guys like they sort of did with Martin Perez?
Well, I would say yes, but I would say that was their second, that was their plan B. I mean, they did pursue, Madison Bumgarner, and I don't think they were seriously in Cole, but
yeah.
Hoonjin Ryu, talked to. I think they wanted and were willing to pony up for a pitcher, but only at the price that made sense for them. The alternative, they went and found, Homer Bailey. I wrote a story early in the offseason about maybe they should look at someone like Dylan Bundy, the essentially failed Orioles prospect that wound up. But Homer Bailey is kind of the same thing. He's a little older. He's kind of got a Kyle Gibson thing to him, in that he gets ground balls, and he would be such a more effective pitcher if he could keep the ball in the strike zone, like Kyle Gibson. I think that will be reminiscent for Twins fans. But they are Bailey in particular is a guy that they think that they can coach him up a little bit. They have some ideas to help him out. They have a lot of they approach their free agents with a lot of ideas on the pitching side, and that's what drew Perez here, and I think what drew Homer Bailey to Minnesota as well. So it was not the first idea, but it just gives them a deeper pool to choose from among Bailey and Hill when he's healthy, and the young guys that they have coming up, that Smeltzer and Dobnak.
We're here with Phil Miller from the Star Tribune, who covers the Twins. I wanted to get into Miguel Sano as well. Just agreed to a 3-year extension worth $30 million. 26 years old, just came off his career high in home runs and RBIs, 34 and 79. What were your thoughts here on Miguel Sano getting the extension with the Twins? Is this the right move for the Twins?
Oh, I think it definitely adds to Sano's value. I said this to a Twins official, and he kind of laughed, but it makes Miguel Sano more tradable. It actually makes him a trade chip, a pretty valuable one, to have his numbers nailed down, and they are reasonable numbers for a guy who clearly has proven that he can hit 30 and certainly far more than that home runs if he stays healthy. That, you know, the Twins aren't looking to trade him. They don't sign a guy intending to trade him, but Sano was a guy who, you know, whose value has been all over the map, and teams would not know what necessarily the price would be. I think it was a good move, and a good thing for Miguel too, because the home runs were big last year, but the important thing was that he missed the first 6 weeks of the season in all of spring training with an injury, with kind of a fluky injury that really I don't think he could be blamed for. The part that he shares the blame in is he got terrible medical treatment after the injury that cost him several weeks. When he came back, he stayed healthy. He was healthy and consistent in the lineup every day for the first time in his career. The ups and downs seemed to be smoothed over. He had a couple of slumps, but mostly he had a full year once he returned. I think it showed the Twins that that he is progressing. He's maturing. The presence of Nelson Cruz helped him, no doubt. And I think they know what they're getting a little bit more, and now they know what it costs them with a 3-year and probably 4-year contract.
It's an interesting take. I sort of like what you said about it. I mean, maybe it does mean that he is a lot more tradable now, but that's how you took it. And I read an article where he was happy. He's like, oh, I'm happy to be here in Minnesota. I want a player for the rest of the career. But the more I think about it, man, he would be really good trade bait at the trade deadline, which is the next question I want to ask about. Say the Twins make that move, and I assume they will. I assume they're going to be in contention, I mean, in the AL Central. But trade deadline comes along here, Phil. What prospects do you think or do you expect to be shopped to get that ace pitcher come the trade deadline?
Well, if you're talking Major League, I mean, Sano and an outfielder are the obvious ones. I think Sano under contract settled for at least 3 years in another team's budget makes him more valuable. The other thing about Sano is he hits the ball very hard. So does Josh Donaldson, actually. He seems to be he's always going to be all or nothing, a home run strikeout guy. But I think the thinking is that he is a little removed from the vagaries of is the baseball carrying this year. I believe his power will won't depend so much on the baseball, which should home runs go down, I think he might retain more valuable than a lot of guys. To your question, what prospects,
you know, yeah, minor league wise,
they have such a logjam in the outfield coming up. You know, all their outfielders are 27 or younger. Max Kepler is under contract for the next 5 years. Byron Buxton is still just 25, and you know, he hasn't gotten a long-term contract yet. These are going to be guys that are difficult to dislodge, and yet in their minors they have Trevor Larnach, the first-round draft pick from a couple of years ago, 2017, I believe. They have Alex Kirilloff, who has all the earmarks of a consistent high-end major league hitter. They have you know, a couple of guys that they can't even get into the lineup now, whose value I don't know where it is, but like Lamont Wade Jr. They have Luke Raley on the roster now. All these outfielders now. Eventually, they might need a first baseman if Donaldson doesn't end up over there in 3 or 4 years as he gets older. But they're just not going to have room to play all of these guys. So some of them are going to have to be traded at some point. And I think the Twins are aware of that. If there is a big trade for a pitcher on the horizon, I would think that some of those outfielders are the names that are going to be involved.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, Phil. Phil Miller here of the Star Tribune. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Writes some great articles. I've been reading them a lot as of late, and I think you guys should too here as we approach spring training. You can follow him on Twitter at MillerStrip. Phil, thank you very much for giving me some time today, and we will talk soon.
Steven, it was a pleasure. Anytime.
And a big thanks to Phil Miller, who gave us some time today on the Strom Sports Show. Always a pleasure having him on. Okay, now, before we get into the Golden Gopher basketball team, which I'm really excited about, I need to hit on this. So, the national championship was on Monday. LSU beat Clemson 42-25 to win the national championship. It was a great game, I thought. Great talent on the field. If you wanted to watch the NFL Combine, well, you might as well just watch that game because most players from that game are going to be in the 2020 NFL Draft. Now, LSU is unequivocally the best team in college football. Joe Burrow put together, I thought, the best season I've ever seen a quarterback play. It's not even that. His intangibles is great. He can really throw it. He's got great accuracy. He puts it right on the wide receiver's hands wherever they run. But I think his ability to improvise is his biggest strength, especially in the modern day NFL. And you look at really quickly a guy like Kirk Cousins, a guy like Phillip Rivers, guys that aren't able, not mobile enough to get out of the pocket after a play breaks down. Joe Burrow has that ability, and I think that's where the game was won. You had two great quarterbacks, and I'm not off Trevor Lawrence. I still think Trevor Lawrence is awesome. But the difference in that game was when LSU got pressure on Lawrence, Lawrence was disrupted. He'd stay in the pocket, and he'd make errant throws. But for a guy like Joe Burrow, who could never seem to get sped up, even when Venable was really blitzing hard on LSU, especially through the interior, Joe Burrow stayed cool. They call him Cool Joe for a reason. He stayed with the pace of the game, and he escaped, and he really was creative in the pocket. He made plays where he's able to give it off to his wide receivers, Jefferson. Even if it's a little two-yard throw, it can turn into 20, and I think that was the biggest difference in this LSU game. But there was one thing that annoyed me about the national championship. And keep in mind, it wasn't seeing Booger McFarland on my screen on Monday night, who I don't think anyone in this world or right mind thinks is a good broadcaster. But the most annoying thing about Monday night was Odell Beckham Jr., who we know played for LSU from 2011 to 2013. So Odell Beckham, like some alumni do this, they come on the field, they add their press pass, and they watch from the side. And they usually show them in the beginning, and that's it, right? If Texas is playing, they'll show Matthew McConaughey. Oh, he's at the game. Here he is on the field. Okay, thanks. Cool. They show Odell Beckham. I think to myself, oh, God, I'm going to have to see this guy on my screen for about maybe 6 or 7 more times because ESPN flaunts Odell Beckham. Every little kid loves him. So what does Odell Beckham do after the field, on the field, after LSU wins their national championship? What does Odell Beckham do? He is on the field and starts handing out real money, which, I mean, LSU tried to cover up and said that it was fake money. What kind of moron do you think we are to think that Odell Beckham is going to bring on Monopoly money and start handing it out to kids? Really? Odell Beckham is on the field celebrating, making it about himself, obviously, because it's Odell Beckham Jr. He takes out money, real money, and starts handing it out to wide receivers, to running backs, to any player on LSU, just starts hanging out stacks of money. Does Odell Beckham know that that's a violation of NCAA bylaws? That cash is an example of impermissible benefits that are prohibited by the governing body? Does he know that? Does that go through his skull or no? I don't know. Because it's clearly, he doesn't give a crap what the NCAA thinks. He wants to make it about himself. And again, This is where Odell Beckham is remembered for more about his antics than his actual football play. Once again, most alumni, they stay away from the camera. They don't want the attention. This is about LSU, not me, right? If I'm an alumni, especially at a national championship game, especially a team that you had nothing to do with the entire year, okay? You were not in the locker room. You were not 13-0. You were not in the national championship. It has nothing to do with you. What does Odell Beckham do? What does he do? He sees the camera, and instantly, as soon as Odell Beckham sees a camera, football field, he needs to inject himself into the spotlight. And that's exactly what he did. Odell Beckham saw the camera. He knew what he was doing. He knew the camera was going to follow him wherever he goes. So he goes on the field, takes out a wad of cash, starts handing out to players, which I just don't understand. Like, dude, what are you doing? You make a mess of yourself, of the LSU program, of your public image. Like, this is the guy, like Odell Beckham, and I'm the first to say, he moves the needle. You know, I know Julian Edelman, he got arrested, and there's not a lot of people that talk about that. And it should be talked about. It really should be. But he doesn't move the needle like Odell Beckham Jr. does, and Beckham knows this, and that's why he, I don't know why he does this to himself. He goes on the field, he hands out money, which is a clear violation, and then this is, once again, this is always about Odell Beckham. Look at me, pregame grabs, kicking the net, the watch on the wrist during the game, the money. It never ends. Let LSU, let the champions enjoy their stage. Stop making it about themselves, yourself, even in the locker room. Why are you letting this guy speak? It has nothing to do with your team this year. He's an alumni. And then the University Athletic Department issued a statement Wednesday saying it was aware of the video showing apparent cash being given to players by Beckham and that it has been in contact with the NCAA and the SEC regarding the matter. Like, what if LSU ends up getting in trouble here? What if they get one of those punishments that the NCAA sometimes has to hammer down on teams, like a recruitment violation or, you know, something with scheduling, or they take away bowl eligibility? Can you imagine if Odell Beckham is the reason for this because he handed out fake money? Oh, like, he just doesn't think things through. Like, dude, this couldn't just affect LSU's program. This can affect you. You can get in trouble for this as a professional football player. You cannot give money to players in college. That is a rule. That is a, that's what we've been fighting. Student athletes have been fighting this. How do you not know that? And to do that, to do it regardless is wrong, but to do it when cameras are right there, I mean, the stupidity is just off the charts. You cannot make this thing up. And then they come out yesterday, which is a little far-fetched about his warrant for arrest, but you can't touch a cop. What, like, some of these guys, some of these celebrities think that their ish doesn't stink and that they can do whatever they want. You are still human. We still wake up and go to the bathroom just like you. And just because you have a little money doesn't mean you can slap a cop on the butt after he's telling you to stop handing out money. And I see him during the game. I just saw a little thing on Twitter. Odell Beckham during halftime, he's like going on a mic. He's taking like a police mic that they shout at people for stop doing this. Like, you know how lifeguards have the whistle and then they have that cone-shaped thing. I don't know what it's called. It's going through my mind right now. But he's yelling through that and the security officer is saying, Odell, please stop. And he's taking this thing and just, I don't know if he was on drugs, but he was totally out of control on Monday night. Totally out of control. But I'll leave you with this. Odell Beckham's got to get that winning feeling somehow. Because he ain't doing it in the NFL. And everything that Odell Beckham represents is more about his antics than his actual achievements. That's my thought on Odell Beckham Jr. Good luck, Kevin Stefanski. Now, the Gopher basketball team. Let's get positive. Now, I know it's early in the Minnesota basketball season, but I've got to give credit to the University of Minnesota hiring their coach for football and basketball. I mean, Flex coming off, obviously, a resurgence year, a breakout year for the Gopher football program. And it's sort of different, Patino and Fleck were in different boats. This was year three for PJ Fleck. This was when he had his culture instilled, his recruits. So he needed to have that type of a year. But for Richard Patino, who lost Amir Coffey to the NBA, who lost Jordan Murphy to overseas, Dupree McBrayer, you know, I know he didn't score the ball as much, only averaged 9 points a game, but he was a veteran presence on that team and did a lot of little things defensively for them. Eric Curry out for a year, so it was a different boat. Patino should be recognized with the job he's doing so far because he is squeezing every last ounce of talent of this Gopher basketball team and putting it to usage. I mean, Wednesday night, this was a game where the Gophers were down 8 or 9 points. In the Big Ten, that is like a 20-point lead in Big Ten play. And especially this year, the Big Ten is really wide open, right? I thought Michigan State would sort of take their grip and firmly grip on the Big Ten, but they really haven't. It's been a pretty open year for college basketball in general. I know Auburn just lost. They were the last undefeated team along with San Diego State. But the Big Ten right now, Michigan State, Rutgers, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Indiana, Maryland. It's very up in the air. You've got Ohio State, who's 12-5, but they're 11th because they're 2-4 in the conference. This was a game Wednesday night. The Gophers continued their winning ways. They beat Penn State 75-69. Now, for people that aren't into college basketball, Penn State is having one of their best years in a very long time. They were 12-4. They had beat Maryland at home. It's a good Penn State team. Chambers does a really good job with them. They've got Lamar Stevens. They've got Mike Watkins. Got a really good team. Probably a NCAA tournament team. This was a game where the Gophers fell behind. They roar their way back. And now the Gophers are 4-0 in Big Ten play at home this year. 4-3 overall. 10-7 as a whole. Fifth in the Big Ten. With the roster, with the turnover, Amir Coffey is in the NBA. He averaged 16 points per game. Jordan Murphy, arguably the greatest rebounder in Gopher history. 14 points per game. He's a double-double machine. And then Dupree McBrayer, who only averaged 9 points, but that's 39 points. Right there between Coffey, Murphy, and McBrayer. 16, 14, and 9. 39 points you lost this next season. And you need to rely on a kid in Marcus Carr he didn't really know much about. We knew he was good, but how is his game translated? He's from Pitt. Can he play in the Big Ten? Well, he answered those questions. He's had 28 points in this Penn State game. He's had a 30 clip against Ohio State. And Daniel Oturu. Maybe this is the year that the Gophers get a lottery pick, maybe a top 10 pick. Daniel Oturu is outstanding. 26 points on Wednesday, 14 rebounds. Guy can shoot the three now. Really good footwork in the post. Can defend at a high level. Really the modern day NBA forward that GMs are looking at. Daniel Oturu fits that mold. A guy that can stretch the floor, athletic enough on defense, can switch on multiple positions, can finish at the rim, has great touch at the free throw line. Daniel Oturu can be a top 10 pick. The growth that I've seen from Oturu from freshman to sophomore year, I mean, it's night and day, and I thought Oturu had a really good freshman year. So I think when you look at it from that standpoint, Carr and Oturu have really been the two guys that have led this team that you didn't know could lead a team. I mean, a freshman stepping into a sophomore role of being a leader, that's hard to ask. A transfer in Marcus Carr, you know, stepping in and saying, you got to be our leading scorer, that's hard to ask for. And I think the biggest part of this Patino thing, not only is it Coffey, Murphy, and McBrayer leaving and still having success, not only is it having unexpected players like Marcus Carr step in. Once again, I knew Carr was good, but I didn't think he was this good. And Oturu coming in after his freshman year, I think that the fact that Patino is winning and Gabe Kauscher and Peyton Willis are really struggling this year. On Wednesday night, Kauscher and Willis combined to go for 1-for-13 from three. Kauscher was 0-7 the third time he's missed seven or more threes in Big Ten play this year. These guys are shooting. So Kauscher is shooting 8-for-49 in conference play right now. Let's see if my math whiz skills can figure this one out. That is 16%. Gabe Kauscher shooting 16% from three in Big Ten play right now. and Willis is 8 for 13. That's 24%. That can't happen. The Gophers should not be winning these games. But they are, because Pitino is squeezing every last ounce of talent out of this roster. They're playing hard for him. They play scrappy. They know their role. And the fact that they're doing this with Gabe Kaucher really struggling at the helm, with Peyton Willis struggling at the helm, you are getting their scores 27 and 26 from Oturu and Carr. They scored 75 points. I mean, it's ridiculous. I got to give credit here to Richard Pitino, who's constantly on the hot seat, who's constantly being talked about. You know, I think that Minnesota is such an underrated basketball state. I think they really do care about their Timberwolves, as bad as they are right now. I think they really do care for the Gopher basketball team. And I think that's where the passion comes from sometimes. They you know, constantly you're hearing Richard Pitino. I know after that Michigan State game, I had a couple people text me, "This is inexcusable. What are your thoughts?" Well, look, I mean, I didn't expect the Gophers to be in this position right now, to be 4-3 in the Big Ten. And the wins that they have this year, I mean, guys, wins against Michigan, 11-5. Ohio State, 12-5. Penn State, 12-5. I mean, those are three, what are they called, Tier 1 or Quadrant 1 wins? Those are three Quadrant 1 wins. I mean, if the Gophers can win 16, 17 games, I think they can just get an at-large bid because of who they're beating right now. It's been a really surprising basketball season for the Gophers. I'm going to continue to watch here. The Rutgers game on Sunday, which is today, that's going to be a really tough game. Rutgers is playing outstanding. They just handled Indiana. Peichel's got that team playing really well right now. Geo Baker's a stud. They've got a bunch of guys that can score in double figures. Rutgers is on the come up, by the way, but this is going to be a difficult and challenging game. The Rack is always a tough place to play. But as of right now, Richard Pitino, put some respect on his name. And I said this last year, but it's time to continue that going into this year, because with that roster that he's working with, he is doing a phenomenal, tremendous job getting every last ounce of talent out of that roster right now. They play hard for him. He's got good culture, and guys have responded well to Amir Coffey, Jordan Murphy, Eric Curry, and Dupree McBrayer not being there this year. Big thanks to everyone who listened today. As always, shout out to my producer, Brandon Morton, the best in the business. And if you want to advertise with the show, visit TalkNorth.com, and I will talk to you guys next Sunday. Have a great week, everybody. Sayonara.